Thank you. So I want to begin by acknowledging my two collaborators, Antoine Vanai and Pierre Delphosse, both at INS Lyon. I spent a sabbatical there a couple years ago, but this is much more recent work. So we're just now putting the finishing touches to it. So I'm very excited to tell you about this connection that we found in geophysical fluid dynamics between a number of different wave systems and this other area of physics, topological insulators. And I think it has another number of implications for this program and exact coherent states, which I'll speculate about at the end. So let me just briefly recall the what's going on with the El Niño. This is a satellite view of the sea surface height in the Pacific Ocean. And there was a moderate strength El Niño in the year 2009 to 2010. So this animation shows a propagation of a pulse of heat going from the west to the east along the equator. And this is called the Kelvin wave, and it's going to be one of the main actors in the talk. So this pulse, one of its effects is because it warms the surface waters in the eastern Pacific, that tends to stably stratify them, and it cuts off the upflow of nutrients that provide food for fish. And so Peruvian fishermen, for instance, find that during the El Niño that their catch is greatly reduced. It also causes, it can cause more storms because of the warming causes more convection from the surface waters, and is sometimes associated with rains in California in the West. In fact, one of the speakers at our conference last week implied that, incorrectly, that the rains that we had just received and are about to receive some more were due to the El Niño, or in fact we're in a La Niña year, just showing that care must be taken to when treating this complex climate system. So in any case, this El Niño is a well-understood phenomena, or fairly well-understood phenomena, and it's a main actor in the climate system. Yeah?
So you said La Niña, so what's the difference?
La Niña is just the opposite phase between the El Niño. So there would be warm water over in the western Pacific. Yep.
So just for clarification, what's plotted is height, and you were talking about temperature, so the relation is just density?
Yeah, so the height is a proxy for the temperature, because the temperature causes the water to expand, and the satellites are sensitive enough to detect that, which is kind of amazing. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears for just a bit and just give you a brief overview of topological insulators in the quantum Hall effect. I know that many of you haven't thought about quantum physics probably for a while, but we'll see that there's some close connections, and even if you don't follow this completely, it doesn't matter because we can understand all of physics completely within the fluid context. This year's Nobel Prize recognized, in part, the work that was done on understanding the integer quantization of the Hall conductance, the quantum Hall effect. So in the Hall effect, we have a current going through a sample, a semiconductor, and there's a magnetic field at right angles. That causes a deflection through the Lorentz force of the electrons, making a potential difference between the two ends. That's been known for over 100 years. Hall discovered it. But what was surprising is that back in the 1980s, von Klitzing's group discovered that the Hall resistivity comes in these discrete quantized steps in units of basically Planck's constant divided by the charge of the electron squared. And so there was some robust character to this, some quantum character to this that needed explanation. So the classical Hall effect would be just a straight line, but instead we find these steps, and they're always at exactly the same positions. In fact, this can be used for metrology, for as a calibrated resistance source. And it's surprising because if you look at the actual devices that find this effect, there are all sorts of junk disorder messy stuff going on, and yet there's this precision that is immune to that messiness. And this is something that we now understand by the name topological protection, and it's going to play an important role in this talk. So one of the things that's going on is that in the presence of the magnetic field coming out of the screen here, the electrons execute this cyclotron motion, this orbital motion, and around the edges, they're going in two different directions, you see, and the upper edge of this sample, it's going to the left, and the lower edge, it's going to the right. And these two directions are separated spatially. So everybody on the top is going to the left, everyone on the bottom is going to the right. And this means that it inhibits the backscattering of these electrons. If they encounter some impurity, they're not going to be able to go the other direction. And this gives us a mechanistic understanding of why the conductance might be immune to all the dirt and disorder. Murray Gell-Mann referred to condensed matter physics, the field that I started working in, as dirt physics. And in fact, one relies on dirt in these samples in order to get any effect at all. It turns out that that's actually an important feature. It's not a defect.
Disorder.
Holly said that too.
I remember squalid state physics from
Here is a kind of view of that quantum Hall effect. Electrons going one direction down below, and up above they're going the other direction, and here's an impurity, and they just sort of steer around that. And we're going to see a fluid analog of this shortly, a simulation of that. More recently, in the first decade of this century, a generalization of this quantum Hall effect called the quantum spin Hall effect, or a topological insulator, has been discovered, in which electrons of both spins, spin up and spin down, electrons come of two varieties, are participating, and that each spin goes a different direction. And but it has many similarities with this quantum Hall system. And materials have been found that exhibit this property with this separation between the spins of different orientations going in different directions. There are various materials now that are known to exhibit this. And a nice thing about these materials is that the physics occurs at higher energies, and we can probe it by different means. And one of the means is we can look at the spectroscopy, look at the dispersion relations of the waves. And so this is energy versus wave number. Energy is like frequency in quantum mechanics, so this is the dispersion relation. And you'll notice that most of the states are down either at this low energy or at this high energy, but there's two states that connect the two. And it's these states that are propagating around the edge of the sample that can lead to quantization. And it's this kind of physics that we're going to see is emulated by fluid systems in some cases.
How does the crossing and the red, the ones on the right, the red and blue, and this big current, how are they all related to one another?
Well, so the different colors here correspond to the different spins. And so you can see from the slopes here that these are propagating in opposite directions. So we calculate, say, the group velocity using the fact that energy is the same as frequency in quantum mechanics. So this represents a particle that's going, electron that's going to the right. So that would be up here. And this one is going to the left. And we're only looking at the top of the sample. So this is the dispersion relation for these what are called surface states, states that are living at the surface of the sample.
Whereas the one on the left,
this one?
You have those on top that are going to the right, and then those on the bottom they're going to the left.
Right.
So you're not only looking at the top, you're looking at both of them, and that's how you have those two energies, top and bottom.
Yes. So this isn't represented down here.
Oh, it's not.
No. We're only down here.
That was the left. picture?
It's just this, yeah.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, okay.
This just represents the fact that this new physics comes in when this layer is made thick enough.
So why is that inverted?
This has to do with the spectrum of particles and holes. I don't really want to go into these details, but I'd be happy to talk to you about it later. Yes?
So, this may be asking you to go into the details, but I'll ask it anyway. What is the process that causes this segregation, that you don't get those intermediate states?
There is a interaction that occurs in these materials called the spin-orbit interaction. It means that the spin is coupled to the orbital motion of the electron. This is a relativistic effect that occurs for very massive atoms, like in this case, mercury, tellurium. Mercury, I guess, in this case, has a very highly charged nucleus, and so there's this strong coupling between the spin, which is like a magnet, and its orbital motion. So that causes this separation between the spins going in different directions. In the quantum Hall effect, we've broken time reversal symmetry by applying a magnetic field, which is why only one direction is represented at the top and bottom. In this case, we don't have to break time reversal symmetry with an external field.
Okay, I promise I'm only asking representational questions there. Okay, so you said we're only looking at the top.
Yeah.
Yes. And I see a red particle going to the right or left, whatever, and the blue particle going the other way.
Yes.
Yet on the bottom, what you have said is that the blue particles and the red particles have both signs. And
yep.
You also said we're only looking at the top. So I don't see that. It seems to me we have
we're looking
one
at the,
sign for the red, one sign for the blue.
We're looking at the top layer here.
Yes.
And the red particle has a positive slope.
Yes,
in its dispersion
yes.
gradient, which means that it's moving to the right.
Slope is the speed.
Yeah, because in
okay.
quantum mechanics, energy is a frequency.
Yes. Okay, I see. I thought the speed was the value.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right.
So probably everyone suspects there'll be another Nobel Prize soon for this discovery of these topological insulators. So as I said, one of the nice things about these materials is that we can do spectroscopy and look at the dispersion relation. And here's the actual data showing these linearly dispersing bands in the two directions for a topological insulator. Okay, so that's all the quantum Hall and topological insulator physics I want to discuss right now. So now I want to show you a famous diagram from geophysical fluid dynamics. This represents the dispersion relation of shallow water waves on a rotating surface, a rotating sphere, for instance, which has a Coriolis force which changes sign at the equator and vanishes at the equator. So here's the dispersion relation known since the 1960s. So in the presence of rotation, the gravity waves that are present in shallow water have a more complicated dispersion and break up into different types of waves. There are still gravity waves, but these are at high frequency. They're at an inertial frequency, a frequency of order, the rotational frequency of the planet. There's a Kelvin wave, an equatorially trapped Kelvin wave. Because the Coriolis force vanishes at the equator, there's a wave that can propagate along the equator. That's what we saw with the El Nino. There's another wave that does that too, called the Yannai wave. That happens to have an anti-symmetry with respect to the north-south reflection about the equator. We'll see a simulation of that. And then there are Rossby waves that disperse, that go to the opposite, in the opposite direction. So these are going from west to east. These are going from east to west, and they travel much more slowly. So this has been known from the work of Matsuno in 1966, and in 1968, it was generalized from the equatorial beta plane to the sphere. And this figure I've taken from the forthcoming edition of Jeff Fallis's book on geophysical fluid dynamics. So people in the 60s could have actually reached the conclusions that I'm going to describe today, but they needed this framework that has been developed since then in the context of the quantum Hall effect and topological insulators. So I want to first show you some simulations so you've got a feel for these waves. The simulations are for a two-layer primitive equation model, so it's a little bit richer than the shallow water model, but allows me to have two different temperatures, a temperature of a lower region and the temperature of an upper region, and then there's an interface between the two. And so this model supports internal waves. So this is actually a pretty good model for our equatorial Kelvin wave, because that's actually an internal wave in the ocean at depth that propagates from the east to the west.
Question.
Yes.
In that plot, what is the abscissa and what is the ordinate?
So this is height, and this is one of the horizontal directions.
Any of them? It doesn't matter whether you're along the equator or not.
Right. So this is just like a cross section somewhere. So I'm going to put this on a sphere. We have the Coriolis force, and so on. Yeah. So first of all, actually, let me turn off the Coriolis force. We'll just excite this in the absence of rotation. And so what you're seeing here is I've plucked the divergence, basically the vertical component of the velocity. It's created a temperature perturbation, and we're going to see it propagate. So it just spreads at uniform speed to the back, to the antipode, and then it reflects and comes back. Okay, because I've set the stratification, the stable stratification, to be uniform right now, so that the wave speed is the same in all directions. So this wave will just go back and forth. Sort of like a earthquake wave goes back and forth.
No dissipation at all.
Well, I have some hyperviscosity, but I don't have any friction. Yeah.
Okay, and so the top graph.
Yeah.
That's not geometry at all. That's not curvature or anything.
No.
That is the temperature as a function of what you have is basically the top of a Gaussian, say, that's localized on some part of the sphere, and you're cutting the radius of this Gaussian thing. Right?
Yeah, I'm just a little, this is just a little cross section. It's just a cartoon of the just.
Yeah, it's temperature versus horizontal coordinate.
Right, yeah. There's also the velocity field, which
I haven't represented. It's not a physical picture, it's a function.
That's right.
In the first case, the two layer model doesn't matter at all. Both layers are the same in
I have a lower temperature. Here than up here, so that it has a restoring force, which is what's supporting this gravity wave. So that determines the speed of the gravity wave.
And is it important that it's discrete change between the two temperatures?
No, I'd like it to be continuous, but this is a very simple model, so I just have it just two layers.
But the same thing would happen if it were continuous.
Yeah, right? Certainly.
Just showed.
Yeah, yeah. So
the wave is not because of a discontinuity.
No. So in a real climate model, you know, you would have 100 layers or something and try to approximate some continuity.
So is this in water or in air?
Well, it doesn't matter, but let's imagine water here, because this is going to be an internal wave. It could be in air, too, because we have gravity waves, internal waves. So I'm going to show you the same view over here, just plotted on a cylindrical projection so we can see the whole thing. So again, the wave goes out, comes back, goes back. Kind of amusing, it bounces back and forth. All right, nothing too exciting about this. But now, down here, I'm going to turn on, the only difference is I'm going to turn on rotation and do exactly the same initial condition. And there is our Kelvin wave.
This is on a sphere. Is it shallow? Are you doing shallow layers?
Essentially, it's shallow, yes. Yeah. Notice that it was non-dispersive. We had a wave packet, and it traveled without dispersing. That's the linear dispersion. All right? Over here, I've started with a different initial condition, one that's anti-symmetric with respect to the equator. This is the Yannai wave. You can see it's dispersive. And we see that the phase velocity and the group velocity are different.
What was it?
This is a Yannai wave. That was the other excitation that goes from east to west. Yes?
So how strong does the rotation have to be for you to constrain this at the equator? Does it have to be like, is it just a step function when you put a little bit, it just becomes like that, or is it?
In this case, it's a continuous function. It's just the usual Coriolis force. But it has to be rotating fast enough so that there's a good timescale separation between the gravity waves and these waves.
So now that you're rotating, it matters whether it's longitude or latitude.
Yes.
And I hear from these different comments that this wave is going along the equator.
That's right.
Okay. Where there is no Coriolis force.
Right.
So the and you say but you say it's because of Coriolis, so it must be because there's Coriolis force elsewhere.
That's right. So the Coriolis force grows continuously away from the equator, and it causes a restoring force. If the fluid tries to move away from the equator, it's deflected back towards the equator.
So kind of gradient of the Coriolis force.
Yeah, which is called the beta effect.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. How do you eyeball the dispersion? I don't quite see.
Okay, so let's look at it again. So let's look at the bottom one. So see that packet is staying intact.
Yes.
So that must mean that there's no dispersion. It's linear.
What about the rest of the stuff behind?
Okay, so over here, this is Rossby waves going the opposite direction.
Okay.
Those are dispersive.
Okay.
Then over here,
got it.
If we look, we'll see that the phase is sweeping through quickly as the bulk of the energy continues. And it's traveling more slowly in this case than the Kelvin wave.
All right.
Yes?
These things are linear.
Well, the equations of motion are nonlinear, but I'm only plucking them gently. So effectively, we're in a linear regime.
That packet there was not a solid time.
No.
It was a linear wave.
Yes. Yep.
Same rotation rate in each case, just switched it.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so here is a numerically calculated spectrum from a shallow water simulation. This is also in the Vallis book, just showing that it agrees with our linear dispersion. So here is frequency versus wave number. This is the symmetric sector, so it has the linear dispersing Kelvin wave. This is the anti-symmetric with respect to north-south symmetry. This is the Yannai wave. And then in both cases, there are these inertial waves, or Poincaré waves at high frequencies, which are well separated from the low frequency physics down here. And it's this that can afford the topological protection that protects these excitations from scattering, as we'll see in a moment. So here's some real data coming from climate reconstructions, looking at the spectrum in wave number versus frequency for the equatorial regions of the ocean, showing evidence for a linear dispersing wave. Although you notice it's rather noisy, and if we didn't have these guidelines, we might reach a different conclusion.
Did you impose symmetric background, or how did you get it to be the symmetric part?
So this isn't my analysis. This is what's called a reanalysis. I'm not exactly sure. That's a good question. They may have literally done a simply averaged the north and south directions together. And then this is the anti-symmetric point, so it gets the Yannai wave.
So you used a shallow water wave approximation here. What? Are the oceans considered deep?
Well, so what deep means, or shallow, would be the wavelength of the wave is long compared to the depth of the ocean. And so for the simulations I showed you, the wavelength was 1,000 kilometers,
okay,
and the ocean depth is of order 10 kilometers. So, but certainly, if we go out here, we'll look at waves that are not in the shallow regime. And so the ocean's very complicated. I'm just focusing on one feature of it here. Okay. Any other questions? So after the discovery of topological insulators, a number of groups have found classical analogs of these systems. So the quantization, the quantum physics, isn't the essential feature of these systems. It rather, it's the wave-like nature. And so it's been found in many other systems. This is a system of gyroscopes that have been coupled together. These two systems are acoustic modes. And this is for light traveling in a specially designed structure. And they all have this feature, you can see in the dispersion relation, of linear dispersing modes, and have the physics of this topological protection that I've been telling you about. What's different in the case that we're discussing is that we are arguing that nature itself realizes this. And without any fabrication of a some special structure, here a lattice, a triangular lattice that gives us a dispersion relation. Here's a particular lattice structure. This looks like a Kagame lattice of these gyroscopes. So now I want to talk about some of the mathematics behind this. Yeah?
Brad, can you just go back to the previous? So when I look down at the bottom left, that dispersion picture,
yep.
What are the key features that I need to take out of that you're going to now connect with topological installation?
Okay, so this is basically wave number and frequency.
Yeah.
And here you see that there would be gaps, except that there are again these states that connect between the gaps. These are the edge modes that we saw previously. These are the linear dispersing modes that can be excited at arbitrarily low energy or low frequency. And so this is a kind of a hallmark of this feature. And these correspond to modes that propagate around the outside on the surface of the sample.
So this is the key. So
this is the key, yeah.
Because normally in crystal analysis, they're all waves, exclusion bands. And so you're actually concentrating on edge states, but taking a very finite mixed construct, and then looking at these edge modes.
Now, in the case of the sphere, we don't have any edge, but we have two hemispheres glued together that have opposite time reversal breaking in the two, because F changes sign. And so the edge modes are right at the equator. That's the connection. We can reinterpret the equatorial guiding of the Yanai and Kelvin waves as edge modes of this insulator. You notice that the waves did not propagate into the two hemispheres. They were stuck at the surface, and that's due to this insulating property. Yeah?
So is the generic property is that you have to have this force reversal? Is that, you know, like at across the equator, you get a change in sign of a force. Is that generic to all these types?
The generic behavior is you need to break time reversal symmetry in at least part of the system, but not the whole. You don't want to break it in the same way through the whole system. All right. So in the two hemispheres, we break in opposite directions. Coriolis force changes sign. That's the essential feature. Yeah. Yep.
I'd be willing to let this go by if I can catch up later. Is that the case? Can I just?
I don't know.
No, I mean, no, I only know fluids and all. And
okay.
Well, is it important that I get?
No, these. I just wanted you to get a feeling for the.
Okay, so this is just a feel.
The diversity of other systems.
Okay, all right. So I'll hammer my questions in the next one.
So I mean, this may be too basic a question, but it's not clear to me what you're plotting here. I mean, this is frequency versus wavelength, but frequency of what? So you have this lattice system. Is this something about how things propagate between the points in the lattice, or I'm just not sure where your blue lines are?
This is a fluid system.
Oh,
there's fluid here
okay.
that supports acoustic waves.
Oh,
and this is just a dispersion relation.
Okay.
There's fluid, but it's in this textured background and subject to some rotation.
The fluid is in the spaces between the spheres or in the spheres?
It's in between these. These are actually like cylinders, little knobs.
So it
knobs.
Just kind of bounces off of them.
Yeah.
So these are the wavelengths of how the fluid moves through this.
Oh,
right.
Okay. And those here, they're spinning around it. That's what that little inset shows above there, the flow one that says flow.
That's right.
They're spinning around those because when they meet a cylinder, they can't go through it, so they can spin around it. And sometimes they spin and spin and spin and spin.
Yes. So this breaks the time reversal symmetry, which is the ingredient.
Why?
Because spinning, if you reverse time, the spinning goes in the opposite direction.
So a lot of things comes right. And, no, I mean, I'm not familiar with that. It could have gone the other way.
No, it's
broken.
It certainly goes the other way. I don't know. I don't want to get bogged down in this particular system. Yeah.
I was just going to ask if you had any videos of the Nash and nearby PDS, because that one explains very clearly almost.
Yeah, I should get it. Thank you for that suggestion.
Quick.
Yeah.
I mean,
What is topological about this?
So I'm not coming to the topology. All right.
It's the cylinders that they have to go around. No.
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 Okay. So to explain why topology is important, I need to do some mathematics now. So I want to, we're now going to switch to something that you should be familiar with. Here's the shallow water equations. So u and v are the two components of the velocity vector, and h is the height. So this first equation is just a conservation of mass equation, and then these two equations are the force equation, the acceleration is due to the forces, that advection, but we have a Coriolis term here, the F term. So what we're going to do is linearize this equation about zero background flow. Just look at zero flow, except we do have rotation. So the rotation itself leads to the waves that we saw in the previous dispersion relation. So to make this as simple as possible mathematically, we're going to put this, instead of on a sphere, we'll put it on a torus. So the torus will identify these two edges and these two edges. So it's just periodic in both directions. And F will be chosen to be constant in magnitude. It won't vary continuously because the details don't matter. It's going to be positive up here and positive down here because these two parts are joined. And negative up here, negative here, and positive in here. So it's kind of like having two equators. And because there are two equators, there's going to be a doubling of the number of modes. So we can work out the dispersion by putting this on a lattice. Since there are three degrees of freedom, there's what we call in solid state physics three bands, we put it on a lattice. It happens to be called the Lieb lattice, which has three sites per unit cell. So it's this orange, the circle, and the square. This is just some technical details. You just put this on a lattice, you diagonalize the linear operator, and this is the dispersion relation that results. You have an upper band and a lower band. The green color refers to what we call bulk states, states that have support throughout this whole volume. And then there are these orange and blue states. Those are the edge modes that are confined to the region near this transition between positive F and negative F. These are the linear dispersing modes that are the topologically protected modes. So basically, what we're reproducing here is just the Kelvin wave and the Yannai wave that we saw previously, and also the inertial waves. Yeah?
So in your dispersion relation, there's also some things in the middle that look a bit green.
Here?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Let's see. So that would be, I think that's a zero mode, that's a zero frequency mode that happens to be spread throughout the whole system. I think that may be an artifact of having this abrupt transition between the two Fs. I'm not positive about that. That's a good question. Yep?
How generic is the fact that you've got these edge modes always crossing this exclusion zone?
Always crossing the exclusion?
Yeah, how generic?
Very. I'm going to now prove that it's generic.
Right.
Okay. So but you can see that this is basically the same dispersion as we had on the sphere, even though we have a rather different system. So this is already a hint that there's some robustness to this result. Yeah?
Is now the time that I should really try and understand everything?
Well,
yes? Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Is there a correspondence between the orange and blue on the lattice and the red and blue on the thing on the right?
No.
No. Okay. You can see how far away I'm coming from that question. Okay. The coordinates on the right are k.
K. K is the wave number.
Wave number. Yes.
And the vertical axis is the frequency.
Even though it says VAP.
Yeah.
All right.
My collaborator produced this figure, so
It's frequency. Okay. So somehow this and that diagram is related to those equations.
That's right.
Okay, and those equations, you're illustrating them on that beta plane as well. Okay, fine. Now, this lattice, you said put it on a lattice. I don't know what that means. What is it?
Often,
H, A, and B must be magnetic.
Often in fluid mechanics systems, to put them on a computer, we put them on a lattice, right?
By which you just mean spatially discretized.
Exactly.
Ah, you guys say put them on a lattice. I see. I saw this. This
just
has different words for everything.
It's just a finite difference scheme. Yes.
They say universal and we say generic, although he says
And but by the way, this dispersion, as I said, is nothing new. You could go back to those 1966 papers. And you'll see exactly.
I'm perfectly happy with that. It's just the lattice that I didn't get. Now I see my difference.
So on lattice, I would have thought maybe going up was the U direction and going over was the V direction. But you've labeled one V1.
Okay. This I didn't draw this figure. This came from a solid state physics paper that I just plucked out of air just to show you this.
Oh, so these variables do not correspond to those variables.
No, don't.
Oh, okay, that helps me. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So just trying to wrap my head around aspects of this. On the sphere, you had the two different types of waves going this way and this way associated with rotation one way or the other. Whereas on a torus, one is going this way and the other one's going around this way. Is that right? So one's going around one equator and the other one's going around the other. Could you describe them as the two different types of waves?
So there's translational symmetry in this x direction, but not in the y direction. And this funny Coriolis parameter is changing sign twice.
Twice.
So you can't physically think of this as a donut rotating in space. Just think of it as a mathematical model that's on a periodic.
So it's periodic in this direction and periodic in this direction.
You want a periodic boundary condition, so there have to be two equations.
Yeah.
Can I ask
one question? You said these bones were the global ones, but they really take the whole thing? They're not localized in one layer or the other?
No, they may be more in one region than the other, but they're spread out over.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys really are tied to a very small region close to the interface. Okay, yep.
The blue and red on the dispersion.
Yes.
So you said the blue are the ones that are localized around
these. Blue is localized on one of these lines, red is around the other line. All right, so we have localized states on both of those transitions. Yep.
So you have numerically solved that system of equations looking for wave-like solutions, and you've constructed the spectrum and the dispersion relations. The green lines, the inertia gravity wave analogs here, are they still discretized?
Yes.
So there is a discrete relationship. Those are, it's correct to interpret what I see of those green lines. They're a distinct, countable infinity of distinct green lines.
Yeah, so to the extent we put that on a finite lattice.
Finite lattice.
And we have this lattice structure, so you can count them. You can count them.
So they're an exact analog of the conventional inertial waves, but they have an exclusion away of possible frequencies, just like them. So you're just on a weird planet with this weird...
Right. Only for mathematical convenience.
Yes.
Actually, we will return to the sphere. Yes?
So what happens... So what happens if you get rid of this continuity in F and go to, I don't know, some periodic
continuous
function? So what happens to the spectrum?
We've done that calculation. It's qualitatively the same. So if we have a smooth transition between F... We just saw on the sphere that for the smooth Coriolis force, we still have these edge modes. So the details don't matter, which is the usual story with topological protection.
Can you see from the equations the distinctions between the Unai waves and the Kelvin waves? It's not so obvious to me that if you sort of flip the whole thing around, left to right, that you don't have essentially the same system that's been translated up by up vertical dimension.
Yeah.
Is this breaking time reversal? I mean, it's not so obvious just looking at it. But, I mean, I can see the FU, the FV and the FU, but then if you look at the two interfaces, they look the same after a reflection in space.
Wait, so just go
down here?
Go the opposite direction.
Yeah, So a Kelvin wave is propagating in one direction. If you look at the interface between F greater than 0 and F less than 0 at the top,
yes.
Which way does a Kelvin wave go, and which way does the Inai wave go?
So up here, the Kelvin wave would go this direction. Both the Kelvin wave and the Inai wave both travel the same direction. We saw that before. And down here, they'd be both going this direction. So we could talk about this in more detail. I'm running out of time. So I just want to get to the topology part, okay? So here is the linearized equation of motion. So this is the frequency. This is this three vector that has basically the non-dimensionalized height and the two components of the velocity. I've transformed to wave number space, kx and ky. And so we're just diagonalizing this equation to get the dispersion. And the eigenmodes of this equation look like this. You can work this out yourself. So it's a nice exercise because of these zeros here and the symmetry. It's Hermitian. Notice, by the way, that this I here in front of the F term, which signals that it breaks time reversal symmetry.
But it wasn't there in the equations before.
That was because it wasn't in omega space.
Yes. The I from the omega went over there. Yes, got it.
So now we're going to parameterize these eigenstates by putting them on the sphere. So we're going to let kx equals the cosine of phi times the cosine of theta, ky is the sine of phi times the cosine of theta, and f is the sine of theta, because we're interested in how these eigenstates change as f changes. This is a completely standard calculation that's done in the topological insulator type literature. So here's that eigenfunction that is expressed now in these spherical coordinates. And the interesting thing about this eigenfunction is that it's ill-defined at the north and south poles, where the latitude, or this is really the co-latitude, theta is either 0 or pi. If we put 0, for instance, here, we have 0 in this first component, and then we have the cosine of phi minus I sine phi. But phi at the north pole is ill-defined, right, where we are in our longitude. Similarly, it's ill-defined at the south pole. We can fix that problem by multiplying by a phase factor, because eigenfunctions are only defined up to a phase factor, but we can't fix it globally. We can't repair the damage at both the south pole and the north pole at the same time.
So I'm a little confused about coming back to north pole and south pole. There's no north pole and south pole in your previous model.
Now we're back on the sphere.
And so what does ky mean on a sphere?
Well, there's a local direction. There's locally flat plane on the sphere. And so kx is in the east-west direction, and so ky is in the north-south.
This is a local analysis on some patch of a sphere?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've now pieced it all together into one thing. So we have a coordinate system. All right. So for those of you who think about quantum physics, the same problem happens if you have a magnetic flux tube passing through a sphere, and we have to look at the phase of, say, an electron going around that flux quantum. We can either think about it from the viewpoint of the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere. There's this basic ambiguity. So this has been known for quite a long time, and it leads to something called the Chern index theorem, the Chern number. The Chern number characterizes this topology, and when the Chern number is non-zero, it's like the genus of a surface, it tells us that there's something non-trivial topologically. And we can calculate this Chern number, and we find that for the positive energy eigenstates, it's 2. For the negative energy eigenstates, it's minus 2. The zero mode that Daniel was asking about, it's 0. And this is the sort of gold standard in topological physics for understanding the existence of these low-energy modes, because there is what's known as the bulk edge correspondence. When we have a topologically non-trivial state, then it's guaranteed, one can show from this index theorem, to have these propagating modes around the edges. So this is obviously, I'm sketching for you a whole bunch of physics that would take a lecture to go into, but it's well known, you'll have to trust me, it's well known from the field of topology. And this is the thing that the Nobel Prize in the fall to David Thallus was partly for, his contribution. He showed that the quantum Hall effect could be related to this Chern number, explaining the quantization of the quantum Hall effect. So let's look at whether these waves really are protected from an obstacle. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put, it's not, you can't see it here, but I'm going to change the stratification in this region of this model so that the waves move more quickly there. And in the first simulation, we have just a non-rotating wave. And you can see it hits that stratification bump and causes distortion of the wave. So now I'm going to do the same experiment. I'm going to put that bump right on the equator and fire one of these Kelvin waves at it. You can see it hits the bump, but then keeps on going. And it doesn't backscatter off of the bump. This is the topological protection that I've been talking about. The same thing that happens in the quantum Hall effect. So we think that actually there are a number of other systems that have this feature. There are Kelvin waves around the edges of ocean basins. There's Magneto-Rossby waves in systems that have a plasma in rotation that separate into high and low frequency components. But I think for this program, what might be really interesting is to think about fluids with mean flows that break time reversal symmetry. A mean flow can look like the Coriolis force. And so it's possible that there are topologically protected excitations in our flows with mean that have non-trivial mean flows that may give us some insight into the stability of excitations and perhaps exact coherence states. Another avenue to think about is that all of the analysis I've been telling you about has been in the limit of linear waves. But of course, we can think about strongly nonlinear waves. We can think about scattering of waves off of mean flows, waves combining together to modify the mean flow, or two waves coming together to form another wave. And does this topological protection offer some explanation that is orthogonal to the ones that have been evoked so far for when, for instance, the quasi-linear approximation seems to work well? Is there some relationship between that and the Kubo number? We wouldn't expect that to hold for all interaction strengths, and nature provides us a nice example called the fractional quantum Hall effect. When the interaction between the electrons becomes very strong, that integer quantum Hall effect that I told you about breaks down, and we get a whole bunch of new plateaus at fractions, which represent fractional charge edge modes that have transport charge that is less than a whole electron. So this may be a kind of feature that we could look for. All right, thank you. All my time.
You've taken all your time, you've plenty of questions, but there are a few more.
So I have two questions. The first is essentially what gives you the insulating properties is the gradient of Coriolis force, more on the Coriolis force itself.
We saw, a change in the Coriolis force, I'd say.
Yeah, so a change in the Coriolis force.
So, but we saw in the case of the torus, the Coriolis force was actually constant, and yet there was a very large gap between these inertial waves and the Kelvin and Yannai waves. So it changed sign, so that was important.
Well, that's because the inertial wave frequency is bounded below by F, right? So F has to be finite, and that just gives you the, as soon as it gives you the gap and it changes, that pushes it away.
Right.
And the other thing is that you said El Niño was essentially a Kelvin.
That's one component of the El Nino system. There's also, it affects the atmosphere. It affects something called the Walker circulation, which I didn't talk about too much.
Does it, is it restricted to the Pacific, or could it just go over the American continent, like you were saying? It can go over these waves.
Which waves? The Kelvin wave?
Well, it's essentially the El Nino waves, but it's mainly a Pacific phenomenon.
Right. What happens, the Kelvin wave hits South America and reflects back as a Rossby wave. And that time scale for the wave to go back and forth is basically what sets the time scale of the El Nino every 2 or 3 years. And you can write down a very reduced dynamical system of only like 3 degrees of freedom, a time-delayed oscillator, which goes chaotic and shows El Nino-like features.
Right. Can you go back to the overhead where you had a Kelvin wave not distracted by a change in density?
Okay. Whoops.
So you said it didn't get back deflected.
That's what I was doing this weekend.
and I wondered if you could explain why it doesn't get back reflected. Is it the fact that there are no Kelvin waves going in that direction, so it can't reflect back on itself?
Right. Because they're, because only go one direction.
Right.
So when they hit a barrier,
yeah,
they if the barrier is strong enough, maybe they could be converted into a Rossby wave going back, because right, they're going the other direction. But there's a bad mismatch in frequency wave vector space. So there's sort of an impedance mismatch which prevents that from happening.
So you call that topological insulation rather than any constraint on the topological integral that you talked about?
Well, the topological integral, the Chern number, guarantees that there are these low frequency modes that are propagating in one direction. And that is the main thing that protects the mode, because it's only going in one direction. Now, it's true that there are these other modes in this system which aren't present, for instance, in the quantum Hall effect. So there could be some backscattering. It's a little bit richer because of these different types of waves that we have. But again, there is certainly a good frequency separation from the inertial waves, and there's also a good separation in the dispersion relations with the Rossby waves.
I mean, do you have to have this topological effect, or do you just need separation in the dispersion relation?
They sort of go together.
Is that...
They go together here, but if you by hand come up with some dispersion that separates the waves,
yeah,
I assume that would inhibit scattering.
Yeah.
But whether you can do that and get waves only going one direction, I'm not sure, without having some sort of topology, non-trivial topology. That's a good question. Yeah.
Just a comment. I think it might be interesting to look at the case of plasma drift waves on current. I think that probably, because you have the reversal of the magnetic field, and you have these drift waves.
Yeah.
That might be current analog of.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you about the MHD case for the waves.
That one you'd have to include some plasma surge.
Right.
I mean, as you said, you could get them in MHD waves as well. But.
Yeah.
First you say that these waves are protected from
scattering.
from obstacles. But then they reflect, so they're not fully protected.
Right. So if you have a hard enough obstacle, like the ocean ends, then that energy has to go somewhere. So we can get reflection in that case.
I mean, it doesn't go over the continent or something like that.
Well, it's water waves, so it's not going to... the ocean ends, and so you have to have something reflect.
How about the...
In the atmosphere, it is more complicated, yeah. So there are other possibilities.
I mean, another question is, I mean, you're implying that there's some relation between mean flows and this, but mean flows are not conservative, and they put energy into the mode, and Coriolis is conservative, I understand.
Yeah. So one could work in some limit where the energy, total energy, is nearly conserved, that the flux of energy from dissipation and input is slow, so then the mean flow then can just redistributed energy with the waves and back and forth and so on, that might be a good arena to look for this type of physics. As you turn up the dissipation, it might obscure things.
I mean, I think that most of the structures that we are speaking of here, the dissipative structures, which are being formed by shear or something.
This all needs to be thought through. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I somewhat glazed through at the very end. The Kelvin waves have been studied for ages by people in GFD.
Yes.
And and you have shown this analogy with the quantum, or with the quantum stuff. What is known by quantum physicists that is going to be rediscovered by the GFD people?
Well, this, I don't know if you consider me GFD or quantum, but this is a discovery that reinterpreting the Yannai and Kelvin waves in terms of this language that's used for topological insulators.
Oh, no, but I'm not expressing myself. Yes, yeah, so you've shown a beautiful analogy between the two.
Yeah.
But is there something that's known about topological insulators that could say, well, this is what the dynamics of the Kelvin waves on a spherical planet would be?
So, well, I've argued that the Kelvin waves are protected against scattering to a large extent. Now, maybe that was already understood by other means, just by looking at the dispersion relation. So, yes, in some sense, you could say, okay, this is nothing new. But what this is, I think, really is it's a new tool that can then be applied to other systems, and perhaps where these types of conclusions haven't been reached. So that would be the hope, is that by using this kind of technology, one can think about other systems that are perhaps not as well understood as the Kelvin wave problem.
We don't need the quantum analogy, but like this, there are lots of classical examples.
Yeah, but
you can take a pendulum driven orthogonally by a gyroscope.
But that's a way to describe a physical system. You know, I've sat through lots of talks about Kelvin waves where they tell us what that they bounce around and what happens and what they transport. And you know, Jeff Ballas describes the dynamics of Kelvin waves with no mention of topological insulators.
Well, one of the reasons we picked the Kelvin wave is that precisely because it's so well understood that we could show how we could reinterpret that understanding this way. But yes, I hope that this has legs and it can be applied elsewhere.
Just a quick question. In your example, you could calculate the index. Is it how difficult is that to do? Let's say we do
a general number.
You do a generalized, you know, you do a problem which is slightly more difficult than the one with the discontinuous.
It's not very difficult. I mean, if you might have more bands, you might have a larger matrix. But this calculation, this procedure is well defined. It's the Chern way of doing things. And so I suppress some of the terminology. This is this connection. But we go through this whole process, and I think it can be done for lots of other systems. Yeah. So I think first thing you would want to do is to look at dispersion relations to see if there's a hint, because this is quite easy to calculate. And if you see this kind of structure, then it suggests that there is this kind of topological order, which then should be verified by the Chern number calculation.
You started out your talk by relating it to the quantum Hall effect. I guess my question would be, what is sort of some analogy to the Hall effect, and how do you quantize it?
So in the Hall effect, there's time reversal symmetry breaking because of the external magnetic field that's applied. And that is rather similar to the Coriolis force, the rotation of the planet, which also breaks time reversal symmetry. So there's a quanta of conductance, E squared over H bar in the quantum system, that doesn't have a classical analog. However, it might be interesting to try to calculate what we could call the conductivity in the shallow water system. We could, for instance, imagine changing the slope of the water to make it slosh, and then it'll be subjected to the Coriolis force, which will cause a current to flow. And so you could calculate a kind of conductivity tensor that would be the analog of what is done in the quantum Hall effect. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. So with that, I think we should thank Frank for a very interesting